Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. On today's show, we have on Rudy Darrow, pitching coach at Kansas State University. With 10 years of Division I coaching experience, in addition to a decorated collegiate and professional playing career, Rudy was named K-State pitching coach on July 7, 2022. Known for his relentless work ethic and charismatic leadership, Darrow has improved each pitching staff he has been a part of and saw records fall at each stop at Nicholls State, Oklahoma, New Orleans, and Central Oklahoma, while sending multiple arms to the next level. Rudy has also had multiple stops at Norman North High School in Norman, Oklahoma as the high school pitching coach. Rudy played 4 years as a professional, reaching AA Erie within the Tigers organization in 2008 and AA Mississippi in 2009 with the Atlanta Braves. On the show, we discuss chaos bullpens, throwing programs, recruiting, and we take a deep dive into the mental game. You're going to love this episode with Rudy Darrow. Rudy, welcome to the show.
Hey, appreciate it, John. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm super thankful for our relationship. I know we got to coach a little bit together last summer with Ryzen, which, you know, I think very highly of the organization, and I know you do too. But I first want to start off with, you know, you were a college coach, and then you're a high school coach, and then you're a college coach. So just to let our listeners know a little bit about that, and we'll dig into some different stuff. So, hey, from a college perspective, from a high school perspective, I would love to really, you know, dig in on some of that stuff too. And I think that's where you're a perfect guest for my show, because that's where a bulk of the audience is. But my first question, after a long-winded intro, you got the job at Kansas State last year with Coach Hughes, who does a fantastic job. And then this is going into year two. So, you know, what are you working on this summer that you're like, okay, I'm recruiting, I'm doing different things like that. But as like a reflective piece, what are some things that you thought you guys did well last year that you're like, hey, try this if you're working with pitchers, or try this, or we thought that this did really well. And then what are some different things that you're tweaking for year two?
Yeah, I think so. You know, you obviously got to reflect on what you did good, you know, what worked, what didn't. I think the big thing for me, after looking back on it, I think the message that we were trying to send got across really well, you know, and that message was move the barrel, you know, and that's what we wanted to do, is we wanted to force contact. And, you know, our stuff was good enough that the more we were in the zone, the more the barrel was going to move, and, you know, the more things that were going to go in our favor. And so that's the thing that really worked. It took a minute to get that message across, but they finally bought in, you know, and it was awesome to see. You know, a couple other things that, you know, I'm trying to get better at, I think, you know, our bullpen scripts, you know, in the fall, I think we got to do a better job of making them more game-like, making them transition a little bit better, you know. So what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to have, you know, when we can get into it later too, but when we analyze hitters, we break them up into patterns, pattern one, two, and three. And, you know, and I think what we got to do with our bullpen scripts is we have to have a definitive description of how we're going to go about attacking each pattern or this type of hitter in this scenario, in this situation, because the more times that we can be put in that, you know, position or situation, you know, the more comfortable we're going to be, obviously, when it comes game time. So that's a little bit, you know, as far as what we're trying to do better as is, you know, our bullpen scripts and stuff like that, you know. But for me personally, and so, and it's going to benefit our guys more, is I need to get more versed in, you know, the analytics type of it. And like, I'm really into the spin efficiency on fastballs right now. Mm-hmm. Vertical attack angle is another thing that I'm trying to, you know, just figure out, and how I can help these guys get better, and how we can improve them too. Like, that's one big thing is, you know, we've got all these numbers and not everybody knows how to make these numbers better. And then that's what I'm trying to do.
No, I really like that. So, you know, while we're talking about, you know, bullpen scripts, I think that's really interesting. So you're just talking about, like, you know, usually, let's say, you know, you start your bullpens and you're like, hey, five fastballs, five changeups, and you kind of group them like that. Yep. And are you wanting to, you know, when they get back and they're getting on a mound, you're wanting to start with more of the randomized, like, hey, you throw a strike with your breaking ball here, and if it's a strike, then we come back with something else, is that what you're starting with, or you want to work up to that later in the fall?
Yeah. So what I'm trying to do, and I'll just tell you what we're going to do, you know, is right when we get here, everybody's going to be caught up. Their volume of throwing for over the summer is going to be where it needs to be at. Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to have them start in the bullpen, and I'm going to have them do their warm-up routine. And at 10 to 15 pitches, and that's the other thing, too, is they got to understand that you don't need as many pitches as you think to get ready and rock and roll for the game. Now, starters, obviously, it's different, but for the purpose of these scripts, we're going to have them warm up in the bullpen, and then we're going to have them jog out to the game mound. They're going to throw their 8 warm-up pitches, and then, boom, we're going to have, you know, this set. Let's say the first guy's a pattern one hitter, and a pattern one, let's, for example, would be the Nunez kid at TCU. Like a contact hitter, you know, doesn't swing the bat very much, you know, very patient type hitter. And so that's like we're leading off the game. And, you know, and you get 4 pitches per hitter. And the goal essentially is how fast can we get to 2 strikes? And what that's going to show them is that, you know, we got to be in the zone a whole lot more often. And then once those 4 pitches are up, we're going to move on to the next hitter. And let's say, you know, since let's TCU, you know, it's Braden Taylor. He's a pattern two. He's the best hitter in their lineup. Obviously, he just went like 8th or 9th overall, something like that.
So yeah, he's pretty good.
A little bit differently. Now, in this scenario, it's the first inning. So, you know, maybe we don't show him everything right out the gate and we got the first 2 hitters out. You know, we don't care if we give up a double right out the gate. And we don't want to really show him everything because, you know, later, you know, 4th, 5th inning, he might come up with a runner on 2nd and his first at bat, we just showed him fastballs and he hasn't seen everything else yet. So we got to use that to our advantage. And that's what I want to try to get the message across is, you know, different scenarios, different situations, you're going to attack hitters different based on what's going on around you.
Sure. And I'll be honest, that makes way too much sense to me, like, to not do that. Right. Yep. So it's like, okay, whenever I started coaching, it was like, okay, we're going to throw 5 to the glove side and 5 to, is there a place for that? Or should we like directly, okay, understand what the pitcher does well, and yes, then try and tailor the bullpen towards that already?
100%. I think so. Like, very rarely, you know, are you going to throw 5 or 6 breaking balls in a row? Now, you might have a guy that does that, you know, but the thing is too, is you want hitters to react to pitches. You don't want them to be able to sit on certain pitches. You know what I mean? And so sure, all your other arsenal's got to be good as well. So you definitely want to have your bullpen tailored to what they do, what their strengths are, because that's how we pitch. We're going to pitch to their sure strengths and never a hitter's weakness.
Would that be any different if you're a high school coach like me?
No, I don't think so. I think that's okay, how you got to go about it. Like, you want to establish certain things, but I mean, I did the same thing at Norman North. You know, that's that's what you got to do. You got to pitch their strengths and you're going to call the game the same way.
Sure. So with that, you know, this time of year too, I'm sitting down, I'm looking at the fall and I'm going, okay, we did this well, we need to do this better. And then with this group that we've got coming back, we need to do X, Y, or Z. But I'm really stuck on when do we start throwing the throwing progression? Like, I know, you know, Jagger long toss is great, but like, when should we start that? And then it's like, okay, then it's based on how many innings the guys threw. Are they in a different sport? We need to probably ramp up for bullpens at this time. So, you know, knowing the Oklahoma schedule for me, we start in, or you know this already, but we start like March 1, and then just kind of walk through, if you remember, what you guys did at North, and then we can kind of talk about what you guys are doing at K-State too. Selfish question, because I want to steal this from you for myself, but also, you know, we can go from a high school perspective from ramping up and throwing, and then we can look at it from a college perspective if it's any different.
Yeah, I don't think it's any different. I definitely think that you got to look at what their body of work is or was before, prior to what you're trying to do. And you've got to look at, you know, what your goals are for the fall. But I think if you can give guys 6 weeks, that should be a good ramp up time for their arm to be in shape, you know, and whether it be they've been sitting out for a while, like obviously if you have an injury, it's a little bit different. You need to tailor it a little bit longer probably. But if this is just a normal, you know, a normal pitcher who had a good high school season and you shut him down for the fall or for the summer, let's say, and then if you give him a good 6 weeks to build his arm back up, you know, he's going to be fine and ready to rock and roll at that point. And that's basically what we do here is we give guys a good 6 week period before we get going here. And then we'll start throwing bullpens, you know, twice a week, and then we'll start scrimmages and they're throwing once to twice a week after that.
Okay. How much time do you usually try and give them off?
Again, I think it's relative to, you know, how much they threw. Like, so here's a couple examples. Like, we have two guys that are playing this summer, and they threw in the spring. You know, they didn't get a lot of innings, and they're throwing this summer, and they've got, you know, a moderate amount of innings, probably 20 or 30 or so. but we really want to see him throw in the fall. So what we're going to do is we're going to have like a little cool down period for about a week or two, just where it's less taxing on the arm and they're not going at it like they are right now. And then we want them to throw in the fall. So they're going to throw in a couple of games, but we're going to shut them down early, like 2 weeks early. And then we're going to give them 4 weeks off of no throwing. And then that should put them right at the 6 week mark to where we can get them back going again. But I think everybody else is different. You know, it's all relative to what you're trying to get out of guys and what they've been mm-hmm. doing. But I think 4 weeks off should be plenty if they've been really getting after it.
Okay. Yeah. Then it's kind of like, you know, you hear I feel like nobody's got it figured out because of the amount of arm injuries that happen. But I like that your process of, hey, we look at this, we look at this, we look at this, because it used to be like, we don't pick up a baseball until, you know, November. Right. And it was like, well, you know, now they're lifting weights. And then there's some research that showed that they need to be at least playing some catch while they're lifting, or otherwise, you know, some different things like they did with Syndergaard. There was an article that Tom House did with that, which I thought was interesting. But yeah, that's the whole thing. So you guys come back. What are you really focusing on this fall? So besides your bullpen, so are you heavy into, you know, getting them out long tossing, you know, just give us, like, you've got this big toolbox that you're going to use to develop a bunch of your pitchers. Give us a peek inside of that.
Yeah. My big thing is I want to create as much chaos as I can. And what I mean by that is I want to try to put them in some uncomfortable situations. And, you know, the guys don't like it very much, but they'll see it later in life. You know, like, we got a pitcher's bag full of our baseballs. Well, I'll put brand new baseballs in there day one. Well, those are going to be the same baseballs we have 5 weeks later, and they're going to be crappy baseballs, you know. But my thing is, I don't really care, because it is, you got to be able to be uncomfortable, you know, and you got to be comfortable in those moments and in those scenarios. And when you grab a crappy baseball, like, if you can be comfortable playing catch with that and doing that, just imagine what a really, really good baseball is going to feel like when you step on the mound, you know. And other times, you know, you try to get them out of their routine and try to, what you try to do is you try to see if you can get an emotional trigger out of them and see how they respond to it. Because it's an uncomfortable situation. You took them out of their comfortable environment and you're trying to throw a wrench in there because you want to see how they react. And the other thing that they got to understand, and it takes a little bit for them to understand this, is that in the fall, you know, let's say we bring a kid in and all of a sudden we throw runners on second and third and he just came into mm-hmm. the game and it's a scrimmage. Well, he may give up a hit and those two runs score, you know, and he might take that negatively, but I really don't care if those runs score. I just want to see how you react and how you handle the moment and the situation, you know? And so,
sure.
That takes a minute for them to understand that, because it's, you know, it's really a numbers game and numbers matter in this game, but it's all a process. So I think the big thing is we're just trying to create as many uncomfortable situations that we can, because the more times we can be in an uncomfortable situation, the more comfortable we're going to be at it.
No doubt. Well, some things that I've been looking into is, you know, especially for guys that we feel like will be in our high leverage situations, making sure that we put them in that early.
Yes.
You know, just like what you were just saying, like, your closer is probably going to have to come in, you know, with two outs and bases loaded, or second and third, and they need a strikeout, or different things like that. And the more well-versed they get into that, then the better off they're going to be, which, again, it's things that you learn the further you go on, that you just kind of, you know, face palm and go, oh, yeah, I should have done this earlier.
That's right. Absolutely.
So with that too, let's say, you know, you're talking with chaos, and so let's say that you do have like a middle reliever, and the guy just for whatever reason was cruising, your starter was cruising, and he lost it, and you're like, oh crap, like, oh, okay, like, Johnny, go get hot. Like, how do you script that in practice?
So they kind of know, you know, when they're going to throw. Like, you know, I always set it up like, here's your starter, here's how many he's planning on going, he's going to be at X amount of pitches. And so they have a pretty good idea. And we have, you know, Connor Berry, the GA that works with me, he's in the bullpen with them, and he's a really, really good asset for us. I mean, he's huge because he's been in the bullpen environment, and he can kind of guide them to help them understand the scenario and situation. Like, hey, he's, you know, he only had 15 pitches left. You know, he just threw seven to the first hitter. You're probably going to come in this half inning right here. And he helps navigate that. So, but they have a pretty good idea of when they're going to come in. I don't like telling them for sure when they're going to come in, because, you know, stuff happens and it comes up in a game where you say you're going to do this and then, mm-hmm. you know, well, we just hit a grand slam and yada, 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 you know. So you got to be able to go on the fly. So I don't ever like telling them a finite, you know, when they're going to come in. They have a good idea though.
Okay, I understand that. And then, you know, like, do you give like a certain verbiage when you're like, hey, get hot now, or like, hey, go start warming up, hey, go play in a little catch? Like, what is your process on? Because the last thing we want to do is get guys in a rush and then they're like completely flustered, and like, we want to try and handle that as much as possible. What are just some different, I don't want to say rules, but what's some advice that you would give me as, you know, a head high school coach, or, you know, any head coaches listening, of, hey, this is how we feel like we go about this, and, you know, this is the advice that's worked for us so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you can know your player, like how fast they can get ready, I think that helps. Like, for instance, our closer, Tyson Neighbors, he does not get ready fast. It's not good. You know, so he's a guy that we've had to adjust, you know, how he warms up, you know. And so he goes down and, you know, the sixth inning, and he starts doing his, you know, his dynamic warm-up and his plyos and stuff like that. Because I think if you're warmed up, as far as where your body needs to be at and you're loose, you can throw a baseball and get hot really quick. And that's the key, is to make sure your body's in a position to where I can say, I need you hot now. They can start throwing a baseball and they're not, you know, just sitting on a bench and then jumping up and starting to throw one. So I think if you know what your personnel is, if you have a good idea of when you think they're going to throw, and let's say you got a starter who he could go seven, but sometimes like he struggles around the third or fourth inning. Well, then you've got a guy that's probably going to be down there in the bullpen in that second inning, and he's doing his, you know, his dynamic warm up and his weighted balls or his bands or whatever it may be. And then that way it can go, all right, double, walk. I go out and talk with him. Hey, let's start playing some catch a little bit, and then boom, we can get him going hot. You know, because I think the bullpen, like, you got to be able to do a good job with your bullpen, you know, as far as getting them up and down, because those throws add up over the long run. And if you get a kid hot and then you set him down, that's just like throwing an inning, in my opinion. So you got to really do a good job of it and be cognizant of what's going on down there.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really good. So, you know, with that, let's say, you know, you guys have your fall period that you get them for how many weeks is it? I can't remember.
It's like 40, you got 45 days. It's all relative. Days. Like, yeah, it depends, you know, when you want to start your team segment. Okay. We'll do skill instruction for like 3 weeks, and then we'll do our team stuff. And then we'll end with the skill instruction right before Thanksgiving.
Oh, cool. So like from Thanksgiving until what, January, they're on their own.
That's like the most important time for them too, you know,
right, exactly.
That's why I think the, you know, August, September, October, November are so important, that you've ingrained what you're trying to get these guys to understand. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, like last year was my first year, and, you know, what was crazy to me is that guys, when I first came in, that they were only playing catch like 4 days, five times a week. And I'm like, no, we got to play catch like six and seven times a week, you know? Sure. And so that was a shock to them. And then once they got used to it, it was just, you know, like rolling out of bed, and that's just what they started doing. So I think if you can get your message across in those first 3 months, everything else will fall into place.
Right. No, and then you build that culture of, because what ends up happening now, from my perspective, and you're getting the kids that are do this at the amateur level, is they go out, they play catch like 120 feet, and then they stop.
That's right.
And then they wonder why their arm is sore. They'll do it like 3 or 4 days a week. And like you said, building a culture of, hey, we go out long and we, you know, like Alan Jaeger says, we feed the arm, or we let it eat, or,
right,
or his, you know, so I really like that. And I think that building that in and just understand, how do you help guys to understand throwing through fatigue is okay, and understanding the difference between like soreness when you need to go throw a little bit, and then like, hey, what's this, like not feeling good at all? What does that conversation look like?
Yeah, I think, you know, one, like that's another thing too. I think the guys can trust me quite a bit. And I tell them in our first meeting, I was like, guys, I've had arm problems my whole life. You know, I've had two surgeries. I've had Tommy John, and I broke my elbow and had to get two screws put in it. And so, you know, I know what it's like throwing through pain. And I think what helps is that, you know, the familiarity of what it feels like to have your arm like injured and what it feels like for it's just kind of going through some stuff. And that's why I tell our guys, we have to learn how to listen to our arm. Like, no one knows our arm better than each individual. And I can't tell you if you're hurting or not. So it's a constant communication of every single day. And I think when they talk with the other players too, you know, like, hey, you know, my arm was feeling the same way this last year. This is what I kind of did. This helped me, you know, work my way through it. You know, obviously getting in the training room and doing preventative stuff, you know, contrast. I'm really big on the contrast, the hot and cold. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just past experiences of, I went through this. I know what you're going through. Here's what I did. Here's what's going to help. Here's what's you can expect to happen. And sure. I think that gives the guys a peace of mind that everything's going to be all right.
Not really like that. And have they, so that when you build this culture, they start to really buy in and do it quite a bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, every day, like I'm real big on, you know, like we've got this kid who can, he can spin a breaking ball really well and this other kid mm-hmm. can't. Well, they need to be play catch partners, you know, and he sure. needs to talk with him and learn this is what he's doing with his fingers and grip pressure mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Like it all go hands in hand. I don't care where you get the information from. Let's communicate with it. And let's go.
Sure. No, that's really good. So let's, you know, what is, looking back to your high school days. So again, college, high school, and then back to college. But you're also, you know, you're on the recruiting trail. What are some different things and common problems you see with, you know, kids that you go, like you were at our, you know, watched a couple games this weekend in Norman. What were some different, it doesn't have to be this weekend either, but what are some different common problems you see when you get freshmen on campus? And what are some different common problems you see, like just as an industry that, you know, I can help fix as a high school coach?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. Like we've got 8 freshmen here right now and, you know, and like it's just freshmen. So they really haven't had an eye-opening experience of that they're not the best fish in the pond. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
And sure.
I think a big thing is everyone really thinks they got it figured out, John. You know what I mean? And right. you don't. And right. I think that's the biggest problem is you don't have it all figured out. And, you know, I think for me is like if I can get them to trust me, I think that goes a long way. And it takes a little bit to get that trust.
Sure.
But, you know, what you got to do what you say and say what you do, all those things. But, you know, I just think if people can go in with a mindset that they don't have it all figured out, that mm-hmm. they need to, you know, listen more than they talk and just kind of take everything in and use tidbits from here and there and just watch the older guys and see what they do. You know, and learn from them because they've been in it for a while.
Sure. No, that's I remember when I knew everything at 20 years old.
Absolutely. And I've slowly gotten dumber ever since. Yeah, I was the same way. And I'm almost 40 years old and I'm still learning, you know, every single day you learn something new.
Sure. So with that, you know, we've got, you were on the recruiting trail this weekend and you're seen everywhere. So you do a great job on that. And you guys do a great job of evaluating pitchers. What are some, without giving away all of your secrets, you know, what are some things that you're like, okay, like I really like to see this out of recruits. Cause you'll have some high school kids listening to this. And I usually share, you know, these episodes with our players here. What are some different things that you really like to see? And then what are some like red flags that you're like, like we can't have players doing this at this level with us?
Yeah, I think, you know, the big thing for me is like, especially if you're watching a, let's say position player, you know, mm-hmm. I may be there for 3 games and you may not get a ground ball and you're playing short, you know, you got to take those reps in between serious because that's the only time I get to see you. You know what I mean? And so, mm-hmm. every ground ball you get has got to be game-like. Now, obviously, you don't have to let everyone rip over there, but move your feet. Let your feet work. Like, let me see your actions and stuff like that, how you can move left to right, how you can come, you know, come get in the baseball and stuff like that. You know, that's the big thing for me. And I like watching how fast the kid gets on and off the field.
Sure.
You may think that that's, you know, very little, but to me, it matters to me, you know, like – you know, what their motor's like. Is it a fast motor? Are they feeling sorry for themselves because they just got out? You know, stuff like that. And like that just goes hand in hand with, and not necessarily a bad thing, you know, if you have bad body language and mm-hmm. stuff like that, because you got to understand that they're, you know, 15 to 18 years old. And, you know, I was once in that. I think that's what we do as coaches sometimes is we forget that the game was really, really hard, you know, right. And, but that's some of the stuff that you look at. You obviously you don't want to see them throw their bat or cuss or anything like that. But I think if you can watch what they're doing in between innings, and that goes a long way to tell you what type of personality and who they are as a person.
Sure, no doubt. And then, so with that, so let's talk about, you know, you made it through the rest of November and December, and you got your guys all back. They're eligible. Everybody's healthy and ready to go. Tell us about what, you know, your preseason, because you got, what do you guys have, 3 weeks before you start games in January?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you get them ready?
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's why the most important time is when you're not with them, you know, is in December and that first part of January. Like, they come back around the 14th of January. So we'll have like 2 weeks of skill instruction. You know, my big thing is like, you know, you work all fall and you get stuff figured out. And then when you go home, they have a lot of other voices in their head. You know what I mean? And that's sure. where you got to talk to them and just say, hey, this is what we've been working on doing. We don't need to change nothing. Let's just stick with this. And you put them on a throwing program and, you know, and hopefully they do it, because if they don't, they're just going to be hurting the team, you know, and they're going to hurt themselves too, because they're going to be way behind. And I think if you can instill the mindset of what you're trying to accomplish and how important it is that these mm-hmm. next weeks are. And I think if you have the right kids too, they should be self-sufficient and disciplined sure. in doing it. And so you really got to trust the kids that they're going to do what they're supposed to do. And that's why I think if you can show the kids prior to that you're there for them and that they mean something to you, I mean, they're going to end up doing it no matter what.
Right. Right, no doubt. And so what does that look like just strategically? So you mentioned the bullpens in the fall. You guys continuing those, I'm sure you'll go live as well. And do you guys like have any, do you even have time to ramp it up, or do you just have to trust that they did what they needed to in December?
Yeah, you almost got to trust that. And that's why, like, the first week and, you know, the first couple of days, you'll be able to know who did what and who didn't. And, sure. you know, like, because like when we first come back, we're going to throw to live hitters that first day, and you'll throw 25 pitches. And so everybody knows what's expected of them. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're going to know who did and who didn't, and then you got to adjust accordingly. But what we try to do is those first 3 weeks, and we got a pretty good idea of who our starters are going to be at that point.
Right.
And, you know, the first team practice, they'll go three innings. The next they'll go four. The next they'll go five. So opening weekend, they should be good for, you know, six innings and 90 pitches, somewhere around there. And the big thing for relevers is you want to see them throw twice in a 3 day span, because that's what your weekend looks like. And you just got to get them ramped up to throw multiple times during 1 week.
For sure. No, that's great. And then you mentioned like your game planning talks, I guess, once you have established, hey, this is how we pitch. Do you bucket hitters?
What do you mean?
Like, so you mentioned, I can't remember the verbiage that you used
pattern,
for like
pattern 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. 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 Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So like we do, and I'm going to change it up this year, because used to, I would just watch the video and then I would, because it's all relative to who's pitching and if you want them to think or not think, you know what I mean?
Right, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But I think the catchers need to be more involved while I'm watching video. And so really what we do is we try to put them in three categories, pattern 1, 2, and 3. And your pattern 1 is like a leadoff type of hitter, a guy who's not going to swing the bat very much. He's going to be patient. He's going to want to get on base, and he can't really hurt you. And what I mean by that is he's not going to leave the yard, you know, or do some major damage. Now a pattern 3 is like the direct opposite of a leadoff hitter. You know, they can be a free swinger. They can leave the yard on you. But the biggest difference in those is like when you get to 2 strikes or a 3-2 count. You know, if you got a 3-2 count on a pattern 1, you need to throw the ball in the zone, because he's not going to chase it. Now, if you got a pattern 3, you could probably throw an off-speed pitch that can be out of the zone, because you know he's got a tendency to free swing a little bit. And that's where, you know, watching video comes into play, and just watching what he does in certain counts, you know, what he does in 2-strike counts versus non-2-strike counts. What does he do first pitch? Like, for instance, we were watching video on the Nunez kid, you know, and his first pitch swing percentage was 7%. And so our goal was to, how fast can we get to strike one? Like, get to strike one immediately. And then what we noticed too is that after he got strike one, like, his percentage of swinging at the very next pitch was like 65%. It was, you know, a glaring number. And So what we did is we threw strike one, and the very next pitch we threw it out of the zone because we knew that he was going to be super aggressive. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of video, you just watch and try to find tendencies. And I'll touch a pattern two. I touched on him earlier is, you know, usually your best hitter, mm-hmm. you got to be careful, like doubling up on pitches and getting into patterns because he'll really hurt you. Those guys can also try to trick you. You know, if they swing bad mm-hmm. at a pitch one time, they'll set you up. So that's why you got to be careful on doubling up on certain pitches in the same location. And again, that goes back to like if Tyson Nabors throwing, I don't care if he throws his curveball three times in a row because it's that good. But, you know, if we got another like Mason Buss, you know, his curveball is just not that good and he can't do that. And so that's part of knowing who you are as a pitcher.
Sure. No, that's really good. And I like that. So let's, what was pattern three? Did you go pattern three?
Yeah. Pattern three is, you know, the direct opposite of pattern one, just a bunch of free swingers, but you know, they can leave the yard on you.
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. I like that. So now you're getting into the game planning aspect, and I love the simplified version of that because like you said, man, it's, you could give them all of their TrackMan numbers and all like everything, and then just say, hey, like go about it. Or you could say, hey, bucket these three different categories, which is what, you know, most hitters are. You're like, hey, it's a leadoff. He probably can run and he probably has decent contact. So no, that's really good. I may steal that from you. But with that, so let's talk about, so you made some changes and then like the first 3 weeks, like let's say you made some changes this fall, or maybe you didn't, you had a freshman that's on campus and he was, you know, he was okay. And then he got back this spring and he really hasn't taken that leap yet. So what does a conversation look like when you go, hey, you know, for me, you know, hey, Jonathan, man, it's just like, we're going to have to make some different changes. And I'm sure you do your homework. You have to do your homework before, because I know you. And you're well thought out. But what does that conversation look like? Because, you know, these guys are with you for a reason because they're uber talented, but they may not be getting the job done. What does that conversation look like?
Yeah, I think, each situation's different, obviously, depending on who the kid is. You know, if you can be hard on him, or if you're not, or if you need to, you know, pat him on the butt or what it may be. You know, if a kid's struggling, you know, I think you got to do a lot of looking as to why, you know, why is he not doing good? You know, and I'll never forget this. Coach Hughes, right before I got the job, he sent me two pitchers. He said, I need you to give me a breakdown on these guys. And one of them was Tyson Nabors. And he threw 8 innings his freshman year, you know, and I give him, you know, analysis of, well, why is he not being successful? He's not being successful because he don't throw enough strikes. All right, well, why doesn't he throw enough strikes? What's causing – why doesn't he throw enough strikes? Okay, well, he's one example. We just had to get him in the zone more. The more he was in the zone, the more his stuff was going to play out of the zone because they were going to swing at it. Now, if you've got a kid like we had a kid this year, Ty Rule, and he was too much in the zone and he's getting hit. And we're like, well, why is he getting hit? Because his stuff's really good. And, you know, what we found out is that, you know, he threw a 2-seam fastball and his changeup was really, really a hard changeup, but it was really good. But the velo separator on it wasn't very much. And so what we found out is that if we throw a 4-seam fastball and don't have to change his changeup, that plays a whole lot better and it's two completely different pitches to the hitter. And so that took us a minute to find out though, because initially he was having success with that stuff. And I think that was because it was early in the season and nobody really had enough video footage on him and his tendencies. And then about, you know, a month in, everybody started hitting it a little bit because they knew what he was going to do. And so then we had to adjust our course and it really transitioned and he's going to be a weekend guy for us next year. So it's all different. You know, I think you got to do a good job of analyzing why they're not being successful. And then you got to figure it out from there.
No, I love that. And you know, that's the hard part of our job, right? Cause man, you never know. So with that, let's talk about, cause I know you're into the mental game. I want to hit on recovery before we dive deep into that. So let's say, let's say we have two different plans. So you got your starter plan pitches once a week, and then you've got your reliever who may pitch multiple times, in the week. What are some of your ways to get them ready for their next start or their next appearance?
Yeah, so a starter's easy, right? Because you know when you're going to throw, you know that, you know, your heavy days can be right after you pitched. And I think you got, so for us, you know, you're playing three games on the weekend and then you got, you know, one, sometimes two midweek games. So let's say, you know, Tyson throws on a Friday. Well, the chances he throws in one of those next two games are extremely high, you know, so he needs to do some type of a workout, but it needs to be like a low intensity workout because we need his body to be fully recovered, you know, if not Saturday, for sure Sunday. And so then going, let's say he threw, you know, one inning on Friday and then came in and threw, you know, three innings on Sunday. Well, he's probably not going to throw Tuesday unless it's, you know, a bigger game and later in the season and we need to win that game. So he can be shut down. So, you know, hey, you're not going to throw Tuesday, you know, so Monday, Tuesday is a good day for you to get after it in the weight room and get after it throwing wise, like long toss and really extend it out and stuff like that. And so again, John, it's all based off of what they've done and what we're looking ahead and what we think that they're going to do in the next 4 or 5 days.
Sure. Are you, so you guys, what tools do you use for recovery? You mentioned the contrast with the hot and the cold. Are there anything else that your guys really, and I'm sure it's individual, but can you give us some different examples of what your guys do like to do for recovery?
Yeah, they, you know, a lot of our guys like, they love contrast. They love, you know, the dry needling. That's really big. I think that's kind of a newer thing that guys are doing. Cupping, obviously, in the training room is something that they like. It's all individual. Like, to me, I didn't like doing that stuff. But sometimes, you know, like Owen, our Friday guy, you know, he liked going in the weight room and just having our strength coach kind of, you know, stretch him out and roll him out and stuff like that. And I think, again, like some of those guys, they watch what the older guys are doing and then they try it. So it's like a trial and error type thing. Mm-hmm. And but we obviously do shoulder work. You know, we're doing it every single day. We're hitting four muscle groups, your lat, rotator cuff, your traps, and then your forearm. And internal mobility is huge. You got to be able to have internal rotation. So we're constantly doing that. And I think, you know, I may, some people won't agree with me, but you still have to run. I mean, you got to elevate the heart rate. You know, the more oxygen the blood your heart can pump, the more oxygen your muscles are going to get. And you got to be able to, and it's short interval stuff. You know, it's nothing, it doesn't last more than 10 minutes, but how fast can we spike your heart rate and how quickly can we get that heart rate to recover?
Sure. No, that's good. So let's get into the mental side. You know, you did a presentation at our coaches clinic last December. I've actually got the PowerPoint pulled up and, you know, you talked a lot about that. Like your whole presentation was on like attacking hitters and understanding self-talk. Kind of walk us. So when you're, let's say you're, you know, your freshman guys just showed up or whenever you start to introduce this stuff, how do you introduce the mindset that you want them to have on the mound?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. Like I think as a whole, you know, everybody, this is what we want to do, you know, now each individual is different out there. Like, you know, Tyson is a very, he was more like me when I pitched, I guess, you know, very fast motor, Owen, very lackadaisical, you know, very just calm, can't really tell anything's going on. So everybody's a little bit different, but at the same time, their thoughts are the same. Both thoughts are the same and they're talking to themselves the same exact way. And I think what you have to get across to them is the fact that you don't care about what happens. You care about how they're going about doing what they're doing. That's the biggest thing is getting the kids to understand that it's not results driven. It's a process. Because if you're focused on results, you're not going to be successful. But if you're focused on the process, which is being where your feet are, staying in the moment and just focusing on one pitch at a time, that's how you kind of take that initial step of making them understand that we're just worried about what's going on right here, right now. We're not worried about if you give up runs or anything like that, because ultimately nobody cares if you can pitch with nobody on base. You know what I mean? Like we want to see how you pitch when, you know, stuff doesn't go your way. And that's how you start doing that, is understanding that this moment's the most important moment and that's the only thing that matters.
Sure. So how do you, like, are there some different ways that you teach that? Or do you just use, you know, I'm thinking your chaos training in the fall is a great opportunity to remind them of that stuff as well.
Yes.
But like, just so last year I tried to start to implement this and we did a lot of Ken Revisa stuff and a lot of, you know, Harvey Dorfman stuff. And we talked a lot about self-talk because, you know, how you talk to yourself is pretty much how tough and how good you're going to be, because you know, you talk to yourself 80% of the day, right?
That's right.
So with that, you know, trying to get them to build those routines and to get it embedded in well enough to where it showed up in a game was hit or miss. And that may be based on the person, and that may be because it was new. But, you know, any advice you would give me on that, just besides, you know, put the pedal to the metal and continue to do it, what are some different ways that you've been able to teach it rather than, you know, just talk to them about it?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is, like, you know, we'll have our first team meeting and it'll be, you know, 20 minutes, and I'll ask them, I'll be like, hey guys, how many of you guys in here are going to be focused for the entire 20 minutes that I'm talking? And nobody's going to raise their hand. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that's the truth. But if you can get them, and they'll do the same thing in the classroom, and that's why they can work on this every day. If you can get them to recognize when their thoughts are straying away from where they're supposed to be at, that's part of it right there. Because then they're understanding that their thoughts they're not where their feet are. They're not focusing on what they're supposed to be doing. And ultimately, what we're supposed to be doing as pitchers is winning each pitch. And so if my thoughts start straying to, oh, that was a bull crap call, or I can't believe he hit that, well, then my thoughts aren't where they're supposed to be. But if I can recognize that my thoughts aren't there, which is the same way in the classroom of thinking about, what am I going to have for dinner tonight? Or what's my girlfriend doing, talking to old boy over there, or something like that. If you can recognize that your thoughts are straying and you can zap them back into where you're supposed to be at, that right there is a good way to practice where you're supposed to be at. And you can do that all day, every day.
Sure. Are there any resources you really like in regards to the mental game?
Yeah, Ken Revis is the man. I know he's not with us anymore, but, you know, it's very simple, you know, but it's, man, it's he's really, really good. Ken Revis is really good. Anything you can get on him is really good.
Yeah, we did well, and there's a course that goes with it of the Heads Up Baseball 2.0, which I thought was pretty good. But here's what I struggled with too. When they heard it from somebody else, like on a video, they tuned out. But whenever I had to start to mix it, I couldn't just go through the course. So it was like, okay, I need to listen to this, and then I need to pause and kind of interject, because it's like you're sitting in class and somebody shows a video, you're not going to listen to the whole thing.
That's right.
But it also, I think when we can embed some of that stuff every day, or, you know, this year the thought process was maybe attach a day of the week to certain things, or attach a week to a certain aspect that we're trying to get involved, and then use that continuously throughout that week so they don't just hear it one time, which I felt like at times year one that I kind of fell into that, because I was trying to do as much as I could to lay the foundation of what we wanted. I don't know if you felt like that at all or not, but it's year one's always tough, but year two, just kind of adding layers to what we've established, I think will be better.
That's right. Absolutely. No, I tell the guys all the time, because I say the same stuff over and over and over again, but I think that's important, and they need to understand that it's important. And, you know, I just think that the more you can tell them what you're trying to get across, and the more you say what you're going to do and do what you're going to say, that I think the more that they're going to take the importance to it.
Sure. Sure. So, you know, how many pitchers, so your slide number two on this PowerPoint was knowing who you are. How many of your pitchers actually know who they are versus are searching for more all the time?
I think it's probably half and half, you know, like
I see that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, like, and it's tough, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people think that they're doing this and they're not. And, you know, they're seeing something different than what everybody else is seeing. And, and part of, like, I'll give, you know, Tyson Nabors is another example. You know, he comes in the seventh inning against Texas Tech, and man, he ain't given up a run in, like, I don't know, a month and a half. And he's just been dominating everybody. And he comes in the game, first batter, there's two outs, and we're up by one. And he gets 0-2 on a guy, and he threw a slider right down the middle, and he hit it 400 feet. And it, like, was the most shocking thing ever to everybody. You couldn't believe it happened. You know, and ends up gets the next guy out, and he comes in the dugout, and it was just perfectly fine. And it was like, man, I threw that ball right down the middle, you know. And like that right there told me, I'm like, he's where he needs to be at. You know what I mean? And so I just walked away. I said, hey, we got your back right here. You got to stay locked in for these next two, because we're going to get you a W. And sure enough, we did. But other times you'll come in and, you know, guys will be like, that was a good pitch. And it's like, no, no, it wasn't, man. Like, that it wasn't a good pitch, you know. And
right.
And the thing is, too, is what I try to get our guys to understand that, like, you can throw balls down the middle and get people out today, mm-hmm. but tomorrow sure. you may not. And so that's why it can't be result driven, you know. But I think if they can look in the mirror and go, yeah, that wasn't a good pitch, they're going to have a much more successful rate of being successful.
Right. No doubt. And then you know, you talked in this one about, and I don't know how many of our listeners call their own pitches, but getting them to understand the previous pitch's result. And do you guys, like, how do you help them with that? So you've got, let's say, you know, you want your pitchers to work fast. So they've got what, like 15 seconds. Yep. So how do you get them to understand, okay, this is what I did, this is what I felt, this was the result, now I have to take a deep breath, and now this is what I need to do next. Like, that's a lot to do in 15 seconds. How do you go about teaching that part?
So that's where I think, you know, I talked about at the beginning, the bullpen scripts got to mm-hmm. be more game-like. So
sure,
that is it's a controlled environment still, so you can walk them through it there a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then, like, if you know as well as I do, like, when you see, like, you do something one time and then it comes up again, you're like, oh yeah, and then I got this. Right. And so that's where I think the bullpen scripts come into play. I think video of watching previous games comes into play too, because they've seen it over and over again. Like, oh yeah, we watched that in the meeting room, that the example, again, use Tyson Neighbors again, you know, the cash kid for Texas Tech came up in the top of the ninth inning with a runner on first. And we literally watched him 3 days earlier, and he had the same scenario, same situation against Baylor. And Baylor threw three fastballs right at him and blew him up. And we did the same exact thing and boom, got him, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just think if you can just let them see it beforehand, and that gives them a lot more comfort in knowing, yeah, I've done this before, I've seen that, I got this.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. So I got a couple quick hitters for you before you go. The first one is, what is something that you have learned lately, or you know, it could be lately being the last 6 months or the last week, but what's something that you've learned lately that's made you a better coach?
Yeah, I think I might get emotional, but my three girls. I think, you know, understanding that everything you do involves them, and just watching them, and just when you try to teach them and understand that, you know, they don't have it all figured out, and they ask all these questions, you know, why are you gone? Why are you doing this? When are you coming home? I just think it puts it into perspective for you that why you do what you do. And, you know, that I think that's why I do what I do.
And I love that. Next one is, what is something that your players love? It could be a drill. It could be, you know, like you talked about needling earlier, which is probably not something we'll be doing here at Claremore. But what's a drill that your players love? I can only imagine how that would go if I tried to do that by myself. But what is a drill that your players love that we can steal from you? If you're like, hey, we're putting this on the practice plan today, pitchers go freaking crazy. What is it?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's always changing. You know, last year, all of our guys were big on the core velocity belt. They loved that quite a bit. We got them going on the clean fuegos a little bit, you know, trying to just figure out spin and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But anytime you put the, you know, we got an adrenotronic camera that can slow that sucker down. Anytime those guys can get on that and watch themselves throw, I think they get fired up about that. Mm-hmm. Just because it can, you know, they can see what they're doing and whatnot. I think it changes from year to year. And there's no right or wrong.
Sure. So back when I was a pitching coach, I was very thankful that we had like five D1 guys on the team, which two of them played for you. So I was pretty good. But we had these two POs who, like, they bless their hearts, they couldn't do anything else, right?
Right.
One of them was 6'6" and, like, could tie his shoes standing up, but couldn't, you know, he had a hard time. And then we got these two other ones who were twins who were just goofy as they just, you know, it is what it is. But they love this drill. We just call it the foam ball drill. And then, so all I did was pitching. And so, like, ever so often, you know, in Texas, because the freaking season is like 6 months long and you're only playing twice a week. So like every Wednesday, we play on Tuesday, every Wednesday we would do what's called this foam ball drill, where I would just literally stand at home plate, like in our bullpen, and hit these foam balls as hard as I possibly could at them. And they thought that was the best thing in the world. So
I love it.
They had such a great time. I don't know why I thought of that. It just made me smile. So I wanted to share that stuff, but they thought that was
something different to do.
It's like, you know, you throw a shutout, you get to hit BP. It's just something that, you know, it's something crazy that pitchers like, because they think they're infielders and they think they can all hit, just like all position players think that they can pitch.
So pitching's easy, like, man.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I know. Yeah, we had a kid this summer, actually a catcher. Actually, I'll tell you this kid's name after this, because you know him. He may have caught for Norman North this last year. But anyways, he was like, how hard is pitching? Like, coming into the dugout, we had walked a couple guys. How hard is it, guys? I mean, it's raining and we're on turf, and it was not a great situation. So we had, I think, 12 walks that game. How hard is it, guys? And I was like, and I said the kid's name. I was like, when's the last time you pitched? And he goes, sixth grade. You know, this kid's going to be a senior next year. He's like, yeah, exactly. I don't want to hear you grab about it. Catchers, it's always like the same thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. They got it figured out, man.
Oh, man. It's so easy. So easy. But anyway, so last question I got for you. What is like one book or resource or just something? Give us some homework. If we were going to go dig into something, what would that be for you?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big reader. I love reading. I'm a big fiction guy.
Oh, nice.
But I think a really good book that'll just put life into perspective, it's called Caddy for Life. And it's about Bruce Edwards. I don't know if you know who that is. But he was the caddy for Tom Watson for a long time. And he ended up getting... And it's baseball related. That's why he ended up getting ALS.
And so,
yeah, just a phenomenal, phenomenal book. And he was basically the guy who made caddies what they are today. Like, he revolutionized it.
Nice.
And it's a really, really good book.
Well, I can tell you, 300 episodes, I have not heard that one. So I'm going to have to pick that one up. You're a fiction guy or nonfiction guy?
Oh, I'm a fiction guy. I'm like,
really?
Oh yeah. Wow. Big Vince Flynn, you know, Lee Child, little CIA stuff.
Is Lee Child the Jack Reacher guy?
That's the Jack Reacher guy. Yeah.
Okay. Right. I tried to get into it. Maybe I'll get some fiction recommendations.
I got some good ones, man. You can't go wrong with Vince Flynn. He's pretty good.
Cool. I love that. Well, Rudy, man, I appreciate you. What is your contact info in case anyone wants to get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. My email's rdarrow@kstatesports.com. You can shoot me a text or call me. I don't care. My number is 985-217-6581.
All right. Well, this is the time where, you know, we're wrapping things up, but is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners, or anything else that you'd like to, you know, just go over before we go?
Yeah, just, you know, just remember that this game's hard, and just take it day by day and just constantly evolve and have an open mind, because the game's always changing.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.